Well, good morning and good afternoon, everyone. I'm Elliot Callan. I am the CEO of Prosperity Financial Group, and I'd like to welcome you to another episode of Meet the Expert. Today, we're talking about a tough subject. Nobody likes to talk about life insurance. No one cares about it till you need it. A quick million, a quick quarter of a million, a quick half a million. Your taxes get paid, your family gets some money. Then we can talk about it. But during our lifetimes, nobody wants to consider it because of mortality. I'd like to welcome you. We're excited to talk about this today. It's a tough subject, but we're going to dig into it, the ins and outs, the nuts and the bolts of life insurance. So if you need to reach me today, I'm at 925-314-8503 or Elliot, E-L-L-I-O-T, at Prosperity Financial Group or www.prosperityfinancialgroup.com. So let's welcome our guest, Tracy. Welcome.
Thank you, Elliot.
Thank you, Tracy Tamora. It's hard to believe it. I'm looking at you, Tracy, but you've been in this life insurance industry for 30 years.
That is a fact.
That's amazing. That's as long as I've been in the financial services industry, building portfolios and bringing life insurance to clients where they needed it. So it's pretty amazing that we started it at the same time. And that's pure coincidence, everybody. She's a regional VP with Midland Life. She's got a whole bunch of credentials with letters that start with C and end with L and U and all these things that make her an expert. So let's get started and ask these questions and get through some. And folks, if you have more questions about life insurance, there are lots of applications for life insurance. Many we're not going to talk about today. And many ways to finance it, premium financing, individual financing, estate financing, trust financing, lots of ways to do that. Just reach out to me and we'll come and see you. We'll talk to you on Zoom. Tracy is very available. She's local. She's in the San Francisco region, which means we can come visit you. And of course, Tracy also knows Midland Life. They're not the only game in town. There are plenty of insurance companies out there. Her desire is to give you the reason why Midland Life is the best option. But we live in a competitive world. I know I'm in a competitive world with portfolio planning. We want to do what's right for the client because we are your fiduciary. Always your fiduciary first and always do right by the client. No matter what, companies, income, client always comes number one. But Tracy, I've got a series of few questions for you that hopefully lead us in the right direction. And if you want to add 2 cents along the way, and I missed a question, please do, okay?
You got it.
Okay. So for everybody who's watching, you're seeing this in the month of June. June is Father's Day month. I look at it because Father's Day for me, obviously I'm a father, is so important, but I also think of my father. So my father was a blue-collar worker, owned a very small ink and solvent business back in New Jersey. And he was a Depression-era baby. He lived through the Depression, World War II, all these horrible things that happened in the 20th century. And he used to whisper in my ear constantly that you've got one major goal for your family, or two, I should say. The first one was to provide for your family. That was the obvious one. You know, to provide for your family. But the second one was way more important to me. And that was your job is to protect your family. You need to protect them from harm. And that harm could include body harm. That's not what we're talking about today. But that harm could include financial harm, whether you're here or not here, or you're sick, or you're living too long or dying too young. Lots of financial harms out there. So we're going to talk about that for a moment. Let's start with a basic here for a second. And that is, I'm a new father. I'm in my 20s. I'm in my 40s. I'm a business owner. I have multiple kids. They're going to college. What happens? How do I even know how much life insurance to buy? I see these ads on TV. $1 billion at age 30 for, you know, $9. They'll give you the money to buy it. It's so cheap. So how much life insurance is the right amount of life insurance?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, great. Well, first of all, thank you for starting with the story about your dad and making it personal because, you know, the reason sometimes it is tough to talk about is because it is very personal, right? And that is kind of what makes it a challenge sometimes to talk about. When it comes to determining like how much coverage do you need, the interesting thing about what you hear on TV is just sort of their throwing out a number that they think you're going to think is reasonable. But 9 times out of 10, that's actually not your number. So there's a really simple way to think about it. It's called DIME. And DIME stands for debt, income, mortgage, and everything else. And within everything else, that includes like final expense, college, if you have kids, those kinds of things. So especially for those living in the Bay Area, when we talk about what is the number, we have to talk about it in terms of immediate need. So like if you died today, what would your family need financially to be able to maintain their standard of living, to pay off their mortgage? And there's lots of calculators that you can use for that. I mean, Elliot, I know you have some, and that's the easiest way to figure it out. So if we just look at like, take a quick example, and we say 25 years old, making $100,000 a year, let's say 35 years old, making $100,000 a year with one kid and a mortgage, the mortgage is most likely to be $500,000. Think about college costs for a baby today in 18 years. You know, how much is that going to be? And then for income replacement, we really want to look at how many years do we want to replace that income for? And most insurance carriers, especially like for a 35-year-old, will go 20 to 25 years worth of income replacement. So we're easily up to $2.5 million, $3 million, $5 million pretty quickly, especially here in the Bay Area.
Wow, those are big numbers.
Yeah.
$3 million.
But if you think about it, if you're not here and you were bringing in $100,000 a year, and, you know, let's say over the next 30 years, right, that's $3 million that your family is not going to have if you die today.
Okay. Well, as we talk about that, and those are big numbers, you know, there's a joke, Buddy Hackett went on one of those late night shows, and I believe it was Johnny Carson asked him, so, Buddy, do you own a lot of life insurance? And he said, no, why do I want to make my wife's next husband so happy in Florida?
Right. So just because we say that's the need today doesn't mean that's what you're going to purchase. I'm just saying that when we run the numbers, that's what we come up with. And then everybody has to be reasonable, right? I mean, people are going to look at that and they're going to say what they think they can do.
So I'm asked all the time, because I bring up to people when it talks about estate and income replacement, and we're not jockeys for much life insurance. We're not a huge life insurance house. We think that if there's a need, our job is to fill it in the best way that we can. We get asked all the time, why should I buy term? Why, which is really inexpensive and always has been and probably always will be. Mm-hmm. Why shouldn't I buy permanent insurance? And then within the world of permanent insurance, there's cash value that's associated with dividends. And the companies that pay dividends, and there's cash value that's associated with the companies that are stock companies that just gain on indexes and so forth. So what's the difference between term and perm, and who cares about cash value of life insurance?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's first of all, just think about it from an agnostic perspective and not worry about all the different kinds, and just talk about term insurance versus permanent insurance. So the easiest way to think about it is term is like renting. Right? As long as you pay the premium, you have the coverage. Typically, people will put it in place. You know, if they're listening to the TV, it might be 10 years. But by the way, 10 years goes by very, very fast. So for a 35-year-old, if we go back to that example, we probably want to look somewhere north of at least 20 years, maybe 30 years of having it in place. For the largest amount of need, right? So that's what term is there for, is for the largest amount of need for a short period of time. So it's temporary, where of course permanent speaks for itself. That's life insurance that's enforced when you die. So most people outlive their term insurance. If they don't, it's usually from an accident or maybe they got a terminal illness. But usually people don't live to their mortality age with term insurance, right? So what happens most often is as people age, and as they get a bit older, they start to really think about all of the things that life insurance actually provides for them, not just the death benefit. And I know we're going to get into this a little bit later, but also the living benefits that come with the policies. So what I ask people is I ask them that question, do you want life insurance in force when you die? And if the answer to that is yes, and I'm not trying to just be cheeky, but my response might be, then when are you going to die? And you don't know the answer to that. So, you know, in all likelihood, the best possible solution is to look at some kind of combination of some permanent insurance and some term insurance. And then it just comes down to budget, right? So if that's just the life insurance death benefit itself. So that death benefit can also become a pool of money that can be utilized for certain health concerns, chronic illness, critical illness, terminal illness. that is something that the insured actually can accelerate from the life insurance death benefit while they're alive. It comes to them tax-free and they can use it while they're alive. So today's policies really have a lot of different features and benefits that weren't there before previously. And so cash value is just one of those, right? But those accelerated benefits are important too. From a cash value perspective, who needs cash value and what does that even mean? I mean, that like sounds even like a made up term when you say it, cash value. Okay, there's value in cash. I mean, what does that even mean? But if you think about it as an alternative savings or a way to build additional assets in a different asset class, I think the picture starts to solidify. When you think about that, obviously, when you're investing in the market, you're not buying all tech stocks, right? You're diversifying into different stocks. You do that with you, Elliot, of course. But at the end of the day, those assets, by and large, are going to be taxed in very specific ways. So, you know, one thing to think about in terms of cash value is, does it make sense to have access to an account that can provide you with tax-free money, basically? Let's just keep it simple and say tax-free money, right? So as opposed to pulling money out of your 401k or your Roth or out of your individual retirement account, where that money is going to come out taxed in a life insurance policy similar to a Roth, that's why it popped in my head, you can pull money out of it actually tax-free. So that's one reason why we talk about it often, and not in the sense of that's going to be a tax-free like income stream forever. It may be that you utilize it for very specific purposes. Like when the market's down, wouldn't it be great to be able to access money from a non-correlated account that is getting reasonable interest, and you can take the money out tax-free and supplement that income in the year and let your money stay in the market, you know, waiting for that time period where it's good again then to take money out. So there's a lot of concepts there. It just depends on, you know, the individual person and what they need.
Yeah, you answered some of my questions I have for you, but I'm still going to ask them and you'll just
go back. Can go back around, yes.
I'm talking with Tracy Tamora. She's the Regional Vice President of Midland Life. I'm at 925-314-8503 or Elliot, E-L-L-I-O-T. At prosperityfinancialgroup.com. So we're talking about life insurance, a subject that's complicated. By the way, Tracy, I wanted to ask you, is it true, and I'd heard this years ago, that only 2% of term insurance ever pays the life insurance benefit out? Is that true?
Yeah, it's actually, the percentage is even lower than that. So very, very few term insurance policies actually pay out because most people outlive them, not because anything the insurance company is doing. You're just, most people outlive them.
Okay, so let's talk about permanent insurance. Let's focus on cash value and uses of it and things like that. And I know that it's confusing. There are some companies, Northwestern Mutual, among others, that's all whole life and paying dividends. My dad had a whole life policy from Prudential. I think there are another one that does that. Mm-hmm. I don't own any whole life. I owned all index life of different kinds. What's the difference?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, a lot of times people talk about it from a competitive perspective. I'm not going to talk about it from a competitive perspective. I'm going to talk about it from a historical perspective, because that's really the difference. The difference is that originally the policies that were offered were actually all whole life. That's the original life insurance was a whole life insurance policy. And you mentioned the Depression earlier. I think it's really an interesting tidbit that of the financial assets that people had during the Depression, life insurance was the very last thing that they would stop paying, you know, because of the value that it would give to their families that they couldn't at the time. So kind of interesting. The evolution of life insurance is that then whole life became, then we separated what's called annual renewable term, which is inside, it's the cost structure inside of a whole life policy, and that became term insurance. So originally, when you bought term insurance, you pay for a certain amount, you know, this year, and then next year, the price will be a little bit higher, and next year, the price will be a little bit higher, and that was all based on your age. And then that was not profitable, quite frankly, for the life insurance companies. So what they did is they levelized it. And by levelizing it, what's happening is in the beginning of your term insurance policy, you're actually paying a lot more than you technically need to pay. And by the end of the period, you're actually paying less. That structure works financially for the insurance companies. So for anybody that's reached the end of their term period, and I put end in quotes because end doesn't mean it has to end. Most people decide that it's time for it to end because there's a cost jump. And that is created by the fact that that it's been level that entire time. So by the time, let's say it ended when you're 70 and 71, now the company says, okay, you were paying me $25 a month. Now I need, you know, $500 a month. And you're like, what? And you cancel it. So that's, you know, kind of what happens with term. Whole life has three very specific guarantees: guaranteed cash value, guaranteed death benefit, and guaranteed premium. And those are all very structured. And so if you want something that's flexible, that is going to change in an environment where maybe you want to take advantage of some market participation, but you don't want to have all the ups and downs in the market, but you'd like it to be more competitive. If you'd like to not pay your premiums at some point and make sure your policy is guaranteed, if you want to put more money into the policy in later years or pay less, you simply need a more flexible structure. So universal life was created. And then again, that comes in many flavors, which I don't think we need to complicate things with today. But in general, there's products that you can invest actually in the market called variable products. And then there's indexing strategies that follow an index, but aren't actually invested in the index. So it's just a matter of providing more flexibility and options for people in a world where things are more complicated than they've been before. So that's really the truth of the matter, is it's flexibility.
So, you know, I've always been struck how high net worth people buy a lot of life insurance.
Yeah.
Sometimes they have financed from a third party, so they don't have to come so heavily out of pocket because they don't want to touch that. Or maybe they're heavy in real estate, but not in cash, or whatever the reason is. And I've always been struck by it. I remember years ago, Tracy, I read an article that Malcolm Forbes, who created Forbes magazine, left his boys a life insurance policy of $75 million. And I know much of that probably went to pay his taxes in those days.
Right.
But still, what a chunk of dollars he left for his kids. And fabulous. And why did high net worth people, outside of taxes, live in a high estate tax number right now?
Right.
To me, that may change. But why do so many high net worth people buy life insurance?
Yeah, again, fantastic question. And I think the first thing that we should ask ourselves is, if high net worth individuals are owning the lion's share of life insurance, there might be something good there. I mean, I think that's really the first point to make, right? And what is it that's good? Well, what's good there is, first of all, there are, no matter what kind of contract you're talking about, whether it's term or permanent, and again, we just talked about all the different kinds of permanent, there are guarantees on that money. There are guaranteed stop losses on those contracts that you can have predictable returns. There's also the opportunity for significant growth in the contracts because of that, and tax advantages that, quite frankly, are just not available anywhere else. And then the death benefit, right? And the death benefit could be geared towards paying estate taxes or quite frankly, passing wealth from one generation to another, which is how most high net worth individuals look at life insurance. So if I told you that if you gave me a dollar, I could do four or five different things with that dollar and bring value to you on each and every one of those things, you'd just be smart to at least look at it. So that's it. It's originally was a product that was at higher levels only accessible to high net worth individuals. In today's market, because of the flexibility and all the things we've already talked about, really most people can participate in a lot of these programs that in the past were only available to the wealthy.
Okay, so speaking of wealthy people with money, let me just talk for a moment about business owners, because they know the concept of using your life insurance while you're alive is to borrow from the cash value. You're not withdrawing it, you're borrowing it. In many cases, you never have to pay it back for the rest of your life. It's just unlimited borrowing. In some cases you do, in whatever way it's structured. Again, that's specific to the individual, and we could talk about that on an individual basis, which one makes more sense. But if you own a company, like so many people do and I do, and you want to both take care of yourself and you want to take care of your key people, how is life insurance used, and what's the best way to use it?
Right. Again, fantastic. So a really similar at the base of what we've already talked about, that why, you know, if you said, okay, I've got, let's talk about a key employee. Let's say you have a key employee and you're like, if that person were to die, then my business would significantly suffer because I have to go out and replace that person. Do you want to save dollar for dollar the amount of money that it would take in order to replace that person? Or do you want to leverage that with an insurance company that's designed to leverage money, right? And do you want to participate with them where they're carrying some of that risk for you? So you're not paying for it dollar for dollar. When we're working with business owners, like that makes perfect sense, right? It's the same thing when we're talking about like a buy-sell agreement, two partners in a corporation, right? And one of them passes away. If there isn't money there to buy out the shares of that person and that money was decided upon in advance, there can be a lot of legal issues, right? Let's just think about, you know, a spouse who has been dependent on the income from this business for years and years and years. Their spouse dies. The owner of the business that is still alive probably doesn't value that business as highly as the spouse whose husband just passed, right? Or wife just passed. So if you have an agreement together in advance on how that is all going to work, you have to have money behind that. And again, do you want it to be dollar for dollar, or do you want it to be, you know, lack of a better way to say it, with discounted dollars? Would you rather, if you never need the insurance policy, would you like the money back? If the employee, key employee, you know, never, you know, doesn't die, retires, it's possible to gift them the life insurance policy and the cash value in it as part of their benefit package. So it's really just looking at how do we efficiently use the assets that we have in a way that is going to benefit the business long term. I mean, it's no different from anything else we think about. And we use insurance in many different ways, you know, to do that. So life insurance is just another way to really position yourself to navigate through some of those, you know, pitfalls that can happen to a business owner efficiently and with utilizing the insurance company to hedge those dollars.
So speaking of the business owner, you know, we were talking about that buy, sell, and you mm-hmm. want to take care of the key people. What about me? So I'm the business owner, and let's assume my goal, let's say, is to sell the company or to pass it on to my children or some action because I'm not going to live forever.
Yeah.
In the middle of this, I have a massive heart attack and die. Because I know that Tammy, my wife, if she were to go to sell the business, and I think it's worth, let's call it $10 million, right? Well, now that I'm not alive, it's only worth $2 million.
Exactly.
Buyer. So why insure me? I mean, am I protecting her? I'm certainly not protecting the business because I don't want my death. I don't want the company to get the money upon my death because she's going to sell the company with that money. What a waste. I want her to get it.
Right. Yeah. So great. I mean, a couple of different things come to mind there, but I think one of them you actually answered, which is, you know, if you don't have the life insurance in place, if it was you and you were to pass and now the business isn't worth $10 million, but Tammy had expected that was what the business would sell for you and you expected that. And all of a sudden it's not because you're not in the picture. You know, we want to prevent that from happening, you know, as much as possible. And term insurance is like the easiest way to do that, right? Because statistically, you're probably going to outlive the term. So maybe you just have the term insurance in place for as many years as you think you will maintain the business before you sell it. So that's a really great use for term insurance. And again, term insurance also can work in that buy-sell arena. But let's think about what things business owners have access to and what they don't. Because a lot of business owners don't have access to funding like a 401k. And many companies, small business owners in particular, might have that kind of structure in place for their employees. But they're not only do they have less ability to save into that in terms of just overall money, but they might quite frankly need to save more, right? Their standard of living, how they see themselves in retirement, in addition to money that they get from selling their business, is greater probably than most of the people that work for them, right? So again, We could use a life insurance contract to develop an asset for the business owner that would provide them with non-qualified supplemental retirement funds that are going to come out tax-free. And that is a fantastic position to be in when you're looking at, where am I going to pull income from? Do I want to pull it all from a taxable account? Does it make sense to think about integrating a tax-free account into that as well, so that you when the time is right? And what do I mean by time is right? Like, taxes, right? Thinking about taxes, there definitely could be times when utilizing a tax-free account would be much better off. You'd be much better off than utilizing a taxable account. So what the ideal position is to have all of those things at your disposal, right? I often talk to people about that. One of the positions that we want to help our clients avoid is that they can only have this or they can have this. What we really want to do is we want to provide them with this and this and this, right? That's the situation that is going to be the most valuable down the road. And again, you know, business owners in particular, because they're thinking about business all the time, they're making these decisions based on, you know, the need of the business, which at the end of the day ends up being them too.
So I was going to ask you about estate taxes and if it really matters anymore, because right now it's more than $10 million of exclusion per person. And I know it has the possibility of going back to a million, but for most clients out there, they're not going to hit a $20 million threshold of estate taxes and so forth. And for those that are going to hit that, we could talk about trust and how much insurance it needs. So I'm going to skip over that if that's okay. But if you've got an estate that's over $25 million, including your company, we should have a whole conversation about how to protect that estate. Because if you don't do it the right way, and your family gets stuck, not necessarily probate because you have trust set up, but if your family gets stuck with a $5 or $10 or $15 million tax bill, that may have to come, they may have to get that from liquidating assets.
So they will have to do that. They will have to do it from liquidating. Like, let's just be really clear about this. You have to pay that tax bill basically right away. So that's a really important thing for high net worth people to think about. For your listeners out there, if they're interested in this subject, there's an entire book on the Mondavi family that's absolutely fantastic and goes through the pitfalls of this conversation. It's an easy read. You can get it on Amazon. I love that book. By the way, today the Mondavi family doesn't own the Mondavi winery. Okay, it is owned by non-family members for the vast majority of that stock. And it's all because they didn't plan for that big tax bill. So it's a really good exercise in figuring that piece out. But listen, is this a conversation we should be having now? It is a conversation we should be having now. In 2025, the estate tax is going to sunset. And we may say maybe, maybe not. It's really not a hotly debated topic. Pretty much widely accepted that it's going to sunset. I think most people think it's going to sunset to $6 million. So we're looking at $12 million for a couple. There are a lot of couples right now who will definitely be worth in the multi-millions by the time they pass. And you know, that's not even taking into account what happens after they pass with that money. I mean, there's a lot involved in that. And it's what's really important is that your viewers know that they can call you, Elliot, and they can talk to you about this, and that they don't have to be worried about it, or don't put it off, because have the conversation now. Especially with working with Elliot, you've got so many experts at your disposal, me being just one of them, to help through that conversation. There's no reason why any family should end up like the Mondavis did. And again, I know I didn't write the book or get any money for endorsing it. I just think it's a good, easy read. And most people know the family, so it makes sense.
Tracy, that's exactly why we created a hybrid family office here, to deal with experts like you, kind of a hub and spoke concept, where the client and myself are in the hub and we're going over financial and analysis and needs. And then we get spoke out to tax attorneys, to the right CPA, to the right insurance expert like yourself. Because no one could have enough experts on staff. No one.
Agreed.
So one final question on the subject, because we spent a lot of time on this. Everything about life insurance is if you die too early. That's why you want to have life insurance. But, excuse me, we live in a world where sometimes you live long. You outlive yourself. Alzheimer's, The activities of daily living start to change. People can't toilet themselves. I don't know when toilet became a verb, but it did.
I understood.
And these are real problems
right
out there in society. Right. So I know that long-term care insurance has been so ridiculously for a while underpriced and mispriced by insurance companies. That now it's the pendulum swung and it's so ridiculously overpriced today. But I know companies like Midland have put long-term care, either riders or capabilities, inside their permanent policies. Tell me about that.
Yeah, absolutely. So many carriers have actual long-term care riders that can be purchased inside of a permanent life insurance plan. At Midland National, we have something that's a little bit different. It's called an accelerated benefit. Sometimes people talk about them as living benefits. And what that allows you to do is to accelerate the death benefit itself for you, for the insured, if you have a qualifying illness. And I'll talk about a qualifying illness in a second. What's really, I think, key about these is, unlike a long-term care rider, they're more expansive and they don't cost you anything to have them on the policy. Yes, I actually almost said the word free. I'm not going to go so far as to say free, because if you use them, there is a cost. But I mean, I think that's reasonable, right? That we're offering you the opportunity to accelerate your death benefit before your mortality age. The cost to accelerate that is very reasonable and very much in line with maybe what you would have paid if you had bought a long-term care policy. So if you don't use it, the point to my comment there is, if you never use it, you don't have Alzheimer's, you don't have dementia, you don't have a fall and break your hip and can't, you know, walk for a year or more, you're not going to pay for it. And in some cases, we'll even give you a return of premium within the contracts if you get to an age where you feel like that's no longer really a risk to you or your portfolio or your beneficiaries. But at the end of the day, what's really important to know is that we don't know what the future is going to hold. We don't know if we're going to have these things happen to us. We don't know what the cost of healthcare is going to be in the future. But what we do know is that we can build it into our life insurance contracts today in some really phenomenal case design ways that I won't, that'd be too complicated, but it's, let me just say, it's really, really flexible. And it's based on what the life insurance company thinks about when you're going to die. So that's mortality, as opposed to long-term care, which is based on morbidity factors, or how soon do they think you're going to have a long-term care type of incident. So for instance, if you have back problems, you may not qualify for long-term care at all. If you have back problems, but you're managing it, you're not taking a lot of medication, or you've had surgeries and you're done with that and things are good, we may give you a preferred plus offer. So it's vastly different. But at the end of the day, what's important is people understand there is something else besides, one, liquidating all of your assets, or two, spending all of your assets to get a long-term care plan. That does not mean that I don't think long-term care is important or long-term care insurance is important. But like you said, Elliot, the costs have gone up so much. It's not as predictable as it had been in the past. And I just think that how much risk do we really want to take?
Well, you've been great, Tracy. I want to thank you for all this incredible information. I don't want to overload our listeners, because it's been great. I know you work for Midland Life. Look, there are companies that I just mentioned, Prudential and Northwest Mutual and Lincoln Life. And gosh, there are hundreds, maybe more, even more than hundreds of insurance companies around the country. And Berkshire Hathaway owns a bunch of them because it's so profitable. And insurance companies generally are the largest holders of cash and bonds in the country, which people think it's banks. It's actually insurance companies, which is amazing. Why, other than the fact that they're so blessed to have you working for them.
Oh, you stole my joke.
And very quickly, why Midland Life?
Yeah, fantastic. Well, first of all, let's not talk about Midland Life. Let's talk about Sammons Enterprises. So anyone listening to this right now can Google Sammons Enterprises. We're the 44th largest privately held financial corporation in the United States. Basically, like, to put it in perspective, we just passed Fidelity. And Fidelity happens to be one of our key partners. So we don't mind that, because we partner with them, and that's fantastic. So we are the only life insurance company that is owned within an ESOP, which is that Sammons Corporation corporate structure. So it's very, very different. That makes us very solid, very safe. We're also involved in both annuities and life insurance. So we have a perfect hedge within the company. That's always a good thing to look for when you're looking at a life insurance company, especially if you're going to look at a permanent policy. You know, nothing matters until it matters, right? Nothing matters until I want to use it. So we want to know that, you know, when I'm ready to take some money out of the policy, or when I have a terminal illness or chronic illness or a critical illness, or my family needs the money to pay off the estate, we want to know it's there. So A+ rated across the board, very strong financials, you know, managed by Guggenheim. I could go on and on and on. But at the end of the day, I will just say this. If I've had 30 years in the business, and of those 30 years, 15 of them I've spent with Midland National. Of that 15, I spent 10 as a producer and an advisor. And eventually they broke me down and brought me on board. And the fact that I actually work for them now should just speak volumes.
Well, you've been great. We've been speaking with Tracy Tamora of Midland Life, Regional VP here in the Bay Area, very accessible for Bay Area clients and prospects who really want to learn a lot more of the uses of life insurance, applications, protecting the estate, protecting your family, protecting you, taking care of your key employees and your business. There's so many great applications, and even how to finance these applications without using any dollars out of your own pocket. There are so many applications here. Tracy, I want to thank you very much today for joining us.
Thank you.
And this has been a great episode of Meet the Expert. And we'll see you again. Have a great day, everybody.